This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's shaking, everybody? It is another edition of the Red Bastard Podcast, your favorite Liverpool football podcast that doesn't make any sense as to why it would be your favorite. Because why the hell would a podcast hosted by a bastard be your favorite podcast? But yet, nevertheless, here we are. I will be with you for, I don't know, like the next 30 minutes or so. We'll be reviewing Leeds. We will be looking at question marks and positives and a kind of a general breakdown of where things stand, at least through the prism of my eyes. After week one, headed into Chelsea, we'll talk some transfer stuff. There's a lot of stuff that we'll squeeze into this podcast. But for a minute, let's just be happy. I was entertained on Saturday. I was much, much happier than I was sad at the overall performance against a Leeds team that I think people are going, frankly, a little gaga over. I'm not quite sure how much it's deserved. But as we review the game, and we'll go, you know, kind of layer by layer through the entire performance, focusing really and truly on, I think, just primarily the big issues coming out of this game. And I think that kind of are staring this team into the face as we begin the early parts of a season that sees us with 3 points in the bag and headed to Chelsea this weekend with a chance, I think, to really put a marker down. I have to say, I think the game on Saturday went perfect as it relates to leading into the matchup with Chelsea at the weekend. I really do. I love the fact that Liverpool comes out of this game and everybody's talking about the defense needs to tighten up. And I think that the midfield struggled a little bit in areas. So all of the guys that are involved in that part of the pitch, that part of the Liverpool team, I expect them to be dialed in on Saturday. I'm generally very pleased at where this team is. And, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a homer, right? I call myself the Red Bastard. There's no way to get around the fact that I will see this through the prism of a Liverpool football fan. I think that the grits are being overcooked a little bit with regards to what happened on Saturday. I come away from the game, I think, concerned about where our defense is. It's funny, I was having a conversation with one of the people that I know will be listening to this podcast at some point. Shout out to my buddy Guy in the UK. He's secured a couple of beautiful memorabilia pieces, by the way, and including a Steven Gerrard autographed jersey with these one-of-one cards. It, like, makes me incredibly jealous. We were talking about, just from a fantasy perspective, we played each other in the first week of fantasy football, and I went all in on the Reds attack, and he went all in on the Reds defense. And I was like, man, from a fantasy perspective, I just don't know that we're getting any clean sheets anytime soon. I don't know. Some of that's about who we're playing. Some of that is about the texture of the games that I think we're going to be involved in the coming weeks. And some of that is, man, we're not tight back there. We're just a little loose. And on one hand, it extends back beyond the training camp, beyond this performance, really and truly even beyond the breakdown of the season and the stoppage of play during the pandemic and then the return. And, you know, we've convinced ourselves that the games didn't matter. And it's true. Like, there's this weird conversation that we're having about the Liverpool back line. And I think it's Allison. I think it's Gomez. I think, look, Virgil. It's Trent. It's not Robbo a lot, really. If you know, there's questions about how high of a line you keep and who's responsible for ultimately making sure that line gets kept. Like, there's some nuance to all of it that they could all share some blame in. But it goes back a long ways. And there's not any one consistent thing, right? If we look at the goals that were scored against us on Saturday, you wouldn't look at it and go, that just keeps happening to Trent a lot. And you wouldn't say, God, Gomez has done that a bunch lately where he's coming over to help and he's just fucking useless, right? Like, we'll get to Joe in a little bit, but like our nitpicks aren't necessarily that happens. You know, Virgil is responsible for the second goal, clearly. We wouldn't say, oh, you know, Virgil, he's got a mistake in him like that all the time. Like, it just, that's not what it is, even though we did see him make a mistake towards the end of last season that led to a goal. Even Allison, you know, I don't know that he covered himself in glory. Look, he had three shots on goal against him. All three went in. He's had better days. But from week to week, we're not looking at any of these things as that's the problem that has to be fixed. And if we go back to issues in the last few years where Liverpool have had defensive issues, and at the beginning of the Trent Alexander-Arnold era, you know, back when United went after him a couple of times, had some success, and the thought was, well, you just go at Trent. That's the plan. You go at Trent. And then they solved that for the most part with all-time historically good defense. And Trent was a part of that. And before that, it was set pieces. But we couldn't defend them. When Klopp showed up, we couldn't defend them. And then for a while, it felt like Klopp got asked that in every press conference. And he would get annoyed by it. And then, if we're being completely honest, Virgil van Dijk showed up. And like that just stopped being a problem for the most part. But we've got this thing now. We haven't had a defensive issue for the last couple of seasons. And now, for a lot of 2020, we have. And my issue isn't that there's any one thing. You can't point the finger at any player and say, swap out Gomez and put in Matip and everything will be fine. It's not quite that simple. The problem that we have right now, for me, on the defensive side of things, is there's just a cumulative effect of stuff. We are now... This time a year ago, for the most part, we were a defensive unit. We just handled everything. You know, and we had some luck along the way. You know, we were phenomenally defensively. And at the same time, teams would miss some sitters. They'd miss big chances, and we'd go, woo, right? I mean, even if we go back to surviving against Napoli a couple of years ago in the Champions League group stages, when Allison makes that great save late, like we were better than them the entire game. The defense had been phenomenal the entire game, but it did take a, whew, we can exhale a little bit kind of a moment. And you know, lately, the ball bouncing had just, you know, consistently, has been, Liverpool just hasn't been getting all of the good bounces. I think Leeds' expected goals on Saturday was like 0.35. They scored three. You know, I mean, you take three shots, all of them for the most part with varying degrees of difficulty, and they all go in. It's, you know, that's luck being on your side, and we've been on that side. For me, my concern is we just seem to be a team that stuff happens a lot to now. It's one week it's Virgil, and the next week it's Joe, and the next week, you know, there's a bad call, or, you know, it's the thing that we said about Arsenal, right? It's like, well, we want to be able to tip our cap when guys make all-world plays and Aubameyang makes that incredible shot, you tip your cap, right? Sometimes the other team has really good players and they do phenomenal things. And that happened to a certain extent against Leeds. However, you know, when, I don't know, a couple of months have gone by and you're still saying the same thing. When it seems like lately there have been a lot of world-class shots against you. When it seems like lately, you know, once a game, somebody that is usually incredibly reliable does something insanely unreliable. Like, my thought is we're just not in form as a group. And I think we're going to get there. But I think it's going to take some time. Because I think when you look at the early portion of the schedule, that may not be the only game that we play that goes 4-3. That could happen this weekend. I mean, Chelsea was 5-3 just, you know, what, like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. It wasn't that long ago these two teams played at Anfield, you know, post-pandemic, and then it just madness broke out. Like, that could happen again. Arsenal, dangerous, right? I mean, Everton's coming up around the corner. You've got a road game at Aston Villa. Liverpool may come out of the next month-ish of games, and maybe it all gets figured out. I am generally believing that we may have to outscore some teams early on in the season, and I don't necessarily – that doesn't freak me out. We're okay. We can do that. You Leeds learned the hard way. If you want to go – if you want to play with us, let's play. Chelsea will do that this weekend, and I think Liverpool is a team that generally – faces so few teams who want to play that if you want to come out and play and get froggy with it, let's do it. Let's get froggy with it. And I don't know that Jurgen Klopp wants to do that in game in and game out because he wants to have a more button-down team. He wants to be more professional, and he wants to keep it, I think, cut and clear. A little bit less madness. I think this first month may have some madness in it. Now, defensively, I do have one question mark, one concern. It's not Virgil. It's not Trent. It's not Rabo. It's not Allison. I do have a bit of a concern about Joe Gomez. It seems that Joe is such a difficult guy to have a conversation about. He's still so young. Like, I'm so hesitant to talk about Joe in a critical way because he's still such a young guy. And I don't feel like when we watch the best teams in the world that we see a lot of center backs his age doing what he does. And we just kind of take it for granted. I think it's because he's been around so long. He feels very professional, right? He's very mature. He's probably the guy that we would say things like very mature for a young man because that's how he plays. But in the last couple of years, I don't think there's a player on the entire team outside of maybe Fabinho, who I think can go in and out of form as much as Joe Gomez does. And he's young. And look, so that's probably completely expected, right? We start talking about, you got Hendo in the midfield. You start Milner, and you go through the front three, and you go through Virgil van. You start naming all the other guys on the team. And for the most part, these dudes are all in their prime. They're all in their late 20s. And Joe, that's not who Joe Gomez is. He's not in his prime yet. He's not of that age where you would think what you would think about Virgil a week ago, which is, that shouldn't happen to him. But if Virgil van Dijk was 23, you would go, he's still 23. I don't know that we do that a lot with Joe Gomez, but he's still a young dude. He's still a player, probably because of his youth and inexperience, relatively speaking. He's susceptible to going in and out of form. And it feels like since we've come back from the pandemic, that Joe hasn't been in good form. He wasn't in good form at the end of last season. I didn't think he was in great form in the preseason, and that's limited sample size. He wasn't great on international duty. He wasn't great on Saturday. Like, Joe is not in good form. There's a part of me that believes that right now our best lineup is Virgil and Joel Matip together as a partnership and working to get Gomez back into some kind of form. Like, I guess this is where I'm at. When Joe gets his form back, and look, man, if he does it in practice, then that's fine. I can't believe every time we see Joe Gomez, it's the only time he's out of form. Man, it was like, he's so good. 26 out of the other days of the month. It's just the 5 times that we see him that we're looking at him. Like, I don't believe that. And then, how do you play a guy into form? You keep putting him on the pitch and you let him play his way in. And I don't know. I said at the beginning of the podcast, I'm not scapegoating, which you may be listening. I don't know. Is scapegoating even a word that anybody outside the U.S. says? I don't feel like I hear that a lot in listening to international football. For those of you, listening in Singapore, Thailand, I'm very big in Hong Kong. For those of you listening there, it basically means putting the blame on somebody. For some reason, you don't know what that word means. And I didn't say it right the first 19 times I attempted to say it. I'm not trying to point the blame at Joe. Far from it. But what I am saying is he just hasn't been in good form lately. And I think we may be better right now. for the next month with Joel Matip starting in place of Gomez. I don't know how I don't know how Klopp is going to handle that, right? Because there have been times when Matip has been the first team call, and it's happened when I've thought Gomez is the first choice. You know, Matip was on the pitch against Everton in the return from lockdown, and I would have thought Gomez would have been first choice then. So I wouldn't be surprised to see those two alternate, especially with knowing that Chelsea's so dangerous. I'm really half expecting Matip to start on Saturday. And Gomez can come in when we're up with about 5 minutes to go, and he can do that thing where he gives Trent a break and he plays right back and we solidify the back end. Like, I'm you know, we're going to play Joe into form, and by December, Joe's going to be fine. I just feel like right now, it's just not happening. And it hasn't been happening for a while. And it might be time now to just tinker with that a little bit, just a little bit. And certainly with the games coming up twice a week at rapid rate over the course of, you know, basically forever, like, he's going to get plenty of opportunity to play himself in. I just think in the moment, I would probably have Matip starting over him until he starts to find some form, point blank. Outside of that, like, I really think people have made too much of Leeds' performance from Saturday. In the second half of that game, they had one touch in the Liverpool box. So, weirdly, they had slightly more possession than Liverpool, slightly more attempted passes, which I would not have guessed in watching the game. But, you know, there's no question they spread the ball around throughout that game. But, you know, they had one touch in the Liverpool box in the final 45 minutes of the game. They had three shots on goal that whole game. Their XG, 0.35. I think we have to be careful. Like, that's why I'm not there's no reason to freak out. The reality is Liverpool, even though they didn't control possession the way they normally do, even though they didn't dominate in some phases of the game that statistically they often don't, they dominated that game. They lived in Leeds' box. They constantly were on it. That's where the game was played. Leeds had the ball. Leeds had a lot of passes, but they weren't creating much at all in the way of good opportunities in our third. Period. As evidence by their low number of shots on goal, the incredibly small number of touches in the Liverpool box, like, you know, that would concern you. Because it was, oh, man, we play Leeds. And frankly, you know, the game, people have said the game, there's been some people like, oh, it reminds me of the season opener against Norwich a year ago. And I have to admit, I believe that. Except I thought Norwich played better than Leeds did. I really did. Norwich had some really good looks against Liverpool in the opener last year. And they just didn't finish them. And look, man, fair play to Leeds. They did, right? So, like, the difference between those two teams staying up may be that Leeds can finish, whereas, you know, Norwich was helpless at times last season. They'd get good looks, and they'd still finish with no goals in a game. They'd look great creating, but then they wouldn't finish, and they'd have, like, one or two goals, and they'd give up five. That may happen to Leeds, though. I mean, I don't know. I just wasn't that impressed by Leeds. It wasn't like when we played Salzburg, you know, in Champions League last year when the game ended. I was like, who is that Minamino guy? We signed that. Like, I didn't come out of that game thinking, oh, well, we should have signed some of those Leeds players. I thought we'd look completely out of form in the back end. Like, just, we just weren't quite there. I thought the midfield looked a little ragged. I thought Hendo, you know, Hendo's such a funny dude because we were dying to get him back on the pitch, and that had to happen because you want him this weekend against Chelsea. So he's got to get some minutes in the legs. But he ran around on Saturday like a chicken with his head cut off. There was almost no purpose for me for his movement. But he did, for a guy having no purpose with his movement, he did all of that at like 150 miles an hour. He's out of control. He got left behind in the midfield way too many times. It felt like Keita and Genie were really having to almost work as a pairing, as a double pivot six, because Hendo was just out of position so much. At least it's the way that it looked. I mean, Hendo at times was just as far attacking up the field as a guy could be and not being Mohamed Salah. I was like, wait a minute. Is Salah off? No, that's not Salah. That's Hendo. What the hell is he doing? But he would just make these. He was trying to press in Leeds's. He was caught. Like, Hendo is trying to find his form through sheer madness. Just, and as a man, I feel like I've been there before, right? Anytime I get frustrated and I'm trying to do something, rarely do I stop and take a deep breath and ask myself, what's the calm, reasonable, and rational way to finish whatever it is that I'm trying to accomplish? Instead, I typically react like a guy who's trying to get ketchup out of the bottle, right? You're just shaking it. You're hitting it. You're beating the side of it. Why won't this ketchup come out of the bottle? You shake it and shake it, and you're beating it, and you're like, why won't this thing? What's going on with the ketchup in the bottle? Sometimes what you got to do is just go get a knife out of the cabinet and stick it in there and stir it up, and boom, ketchup comes out of the bottle. Or you buy a fucking bottle that squeezes, right? Like, those were your choices. You know, back in the day, you buy a ketchup bottle that's in glass, and it takes forever for the ketchup to go out, or you get a squeezable bottle, and then you never have to worry about that again. Which probably made that metaphor just then that I used a little shaky for those who were like, well, why is he just sticking a knife in the ketchup bottle? Why doesn't he just squeeze it? This is weird to me, Daddy. Hendo will be fine. What did we learn about the midfield? I think we learned a few really important things. One, Gini Wijnaldum remains insanely important to what Liverpool is doing in the midfield. I mean, you know, I don't think he's going anywhere. In fact, one of the weird things about the meeting that he had with Klopp last week is that the meeting ended, right? And he goes into that meeting. There were daily reports that Gini Wijnaldum was about to be sold to Barcelona for X amount of dollars and blah, 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 blah. Gini goes in with Klopp. Nothing gets said for about 20. I mean, it was like Wednesday. I was all day hitting refresh on Twitter, like, who's going to be the first person to have an update on what the hell happened in this meeting? 24 hours goes by and nobody says a thing. And I'm a reporter. I'm like, what the hell's going on in Merseyside that the people on this beat aren't reporting on this thing that we were all talking about? Oh, it's meetings happening today. Jurgen's meeting with Genie, and like, mum's the word. Next day, there's a baby bit of word. It's like, oh, the meeting went good. Meeting went good. Genie wants to stay. Jurgen wants him to stay. It went good. It was like nothing else outside of that. It was like, well, okay, that's cool. They're happy. What does that mean? Is he going to get a contract? Are they going to let him walk? Are they going to sell him? What's happening? And it's been a week. We still don't know. Klopp's, I'm happy with him. Genie's smiling at practice. He's playing in games, but that's it. I know that there have been no more headlines about Genie going to Barcelona. That has stopped. I haven't seen one in a week. So I don't know that we know long-term what the hell's going on with Genie Wijnaldum, but he seems happy. Klopp seems happy. Klopp is clearly going to keep picking him. And it's been all quiet on the Western Front right now as it relates to what is next with Genie. So I'll just assume that he's going to keep playing. So that hasn't changed. He's not buried. If anything, I guess we're about to get to a point when the games are coming twice a week, when the midfield is going to rotate so much that it's not going to matter in a specific game. That we are like, who were the three that he picked? Who's the odd man? They're all going to play a lot. They're all going to play a lot. And I think one of the things that happened on Saturday was that Fabinho played himself back into being needed. And he hadn't done that in a while. And I think maybe Klopp scared his ass into some form. And it was really interesting to me that Curtis Jones came on the pitch before James Milner, that we had talked about James Milner potentially getting a start in that game because it was Leeds, because it's his boyhood club, because we didn't know if Hendo was going to play and maybe you needed an old head out there to be the captain, right? And then we're up 3-2. We're last 15 minutes of the game. That seemed to be screaming. Klopp's old move in that situation is to bring in James Milner. Bring in the adult, close down the game. We were in a game that seemingly was calling for, well, if you're going to make a sub, bring in the adult, let's close out the game. Instead, he brought in Curtis Jones. And it immediately backfired because Curtis came in, wasn't quite ready for play. This is like second or third time in like the last 10 games that we've played where we've been caught out of position in the second half coming out of a change. So just, you know, I'm not saying it's a problem. What I'm saying is we got to be on top of that. We have to. And Curtis, I thought, played very well, but if that substitution doesn't happen right then and there at that area of the pitch, bringing him into the game in that moment, it was bad luck more than anything, but it directly resulted in that goal occurring. And then Liverpool, you know, strapped on their big boy britches and went out and got the goal that they needed. And Fabinho helped create it. And, you know, 4-3, we survived. We did what we got. We were deserving winners of the game. We were more controlling and better in that game than people, I think, have given proper due and whatever. Like, you know, we've won trophies. Like, we don't need anybody's credit for a season opening win, but we were better than people are saying. And Leeds wasn't as good as everybody is saying, unless three shots on target the entire game and one touch in the opponent's box in the second half is somehow an indication of great play that I just don't know about. I mean, if I tell you on Saturday when we play Chelsea that we only have three shots on goal and we don't get it into their box but one touch in the second half, I mean, do we need to watch the game? We're going to be screaming bloody murder. So I don't want to hear this Leeds great. They're going to – I don't know. I do not know that Leeds yet is better than Norwich. I thought Leeds – I need to see Leeds do that for 10 games, let alone 38 games. I need to see what happens when Leeds is on the wrong end of a 6-1 game. Because it's going to happen. It could have happened on Saturday. I mean, that game was begging. Liverpool had the opportunities. And they just didn't. It was an opening game of the season. Meanwhile, I'll say this. I don't know that I was. I thought Mo was great. But I don't know that he was what everybody's saying that he was, right? I mean, if I'm going to look at United and limit the amount of credit that I give Bruno Fernandes because he makes a bunch of penalties, then I have to say, well, you know, Mo did what he was supposed to do. He, you know, penalties are supposed to be like 85% goals. He's supposed to make that. So he did, and we needed him. And I am so – look, I had him on fantasy. Like, I'll take that 20-point monster that he posted in fantasy. I only regret that I didn't captain him over Sadio. And yes, I may have Sadio and Mo both into my fantasy lineup right now. And I scored a bunch of points, and I had a good week one in fantasy. So don't judge me. Don't be like, you're such a homer. Yes, I am. But I always have those two guys in my lineup, and they score a lot. And my teams generally do very well, but not well enough because I haven't won anything in a long time. My first year in fantasy was fantastic. And then I'm very average, if I'm being completely honest. But I thought Mo was okay. I've seen Mo play better. I guess my thing with Mo is, like, I already think he's one of the best players in the world. I already have, I think, the exact right amount of proper respect for him. Like, he's a top five player in the EPL. Simple as that. And, you know, last week, I thought he played very well, but that was not the best that we've seen of Mo Salah. That was regular Mo Salah. I want to see more from him. I want to see Mo Salah do that consistently, because I was a little concerned about Mo coming into the season, in that you know, at the end of last year, he was getting a flood of opportunities and he was just missing them all. It felt like he so badly wanted to get to 20 that he just never did. And preseason's preseason, but he didn't really show anything there. You didn't see anything that would make you think, oh man, Mo Salah's about to come on to the season like gangbusters. Not that it matters, because he did come onto the scene like gangbusters, and I don't know that we saw it quite coming like that. I mean, there were more people who were convinced that he'd cut his hair and somehow, you know, had Samsoned himself, right? He cut all his hair off and now he's lost his powers. There was more people who thought that him trimming his hair was problematic than I think there were people saying, well, he's about to go for a Hattie in the opener. And I didn't hear a whole lot of that. I'm glad to see him get on. Like, what I did realize was seeing Mo Salah get a hat trick in the opener, him getting those three goals, two of them via penalty, including the second shot was beautiful. It was a rocket shot. Like, hey, like I said, I've seen that to me, that was just Mo Salah. But him getting off to a good start is critically important. I actually like the idea that Mo got a hat trick. So now he gets to feel good like he's in control of the golden boot race, as opposed to last year when it felt like he was in chase mode the entire time. Meanwhile, Sadio walks into the training pitch today, and he's three behind Mo Salah. So he will be motivated. Like, those two guys are friendly rivals, but they are rivals, and there is no way. I mean, think about last year. Last year, they essentially finished tied. The year before that, they tie for the golden boot. The year before that, Salah has the wonder season that blows everybody's doors away. But those two guys are like, every day, they have a friendly competition to be the best African player in the world. And it's between those two guys. And I suppose, like, Riyad Mahrez is another guy that is in the conversation every year for, like, who's the player of the year in Africa. But those two guys are competing against each other. Sadio Mane will see that Mo Salah's hat trick. He will want that himself. And I think that will push both of those guys. I really feel good about our position going. I'm not worried about Chelsea at all. I expect us to put in a commanding performance against Chelsea this weekend. That is my set of expectations. We're going to win. I think it may be like a 4-2 type game, but there's also a part of me that wonders, this might be where defensively we come together once. I don't know. If it's going to happen, now it happens. If it doesn't, I think it may take a month for us to get there. But I have a lot of faith in this Liverpool team that when we question a piece of their artillery even a little bit, they almost always respond. And I have to believe Saturday had Virgil van Dijk's attention. I have to believe that Alisson feels like, all right, well, I'm not letting every goal that gets shot that hits me on goal go through again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think all those guys will come in with an extra little bit of dialed in that might not have happened in a 5-1. Maybe we get into a wild game at Chelsea. Maybe a wild game. I'm convinced we'll score goals. I'm convinced the midfield will play better. It will be a more normal game of football. And I think our defense will play better. So my anticipation is that we win that game soundly. I think the story coming out of this upcoming weekend, when we beat Chelsea, will be, oh yeah, Liverpool's still some bad motherfuckers. Like, that's the headline. I want to see that on the back page of all of the tabloids on Sunday in the UK. Still bad motherfuckers. That's what I want to see. Earmuffs to the kids out there listening with their dads in the car, but that needs to be the headline, because that's what I want to see. I want to see Liverpool take their wallet out and be like, oh, Chelsea will see the wallet and be like, oh, those are the bad motherfuckers. It says on their wallet, bad motherfucker. Like, that's what I need. It's time to be some bad MFs. And it's interesting now how the season has started. Transfer window is a little bit less important. You can say what you want to. I don't know that anything about Saturday changes with Thiago on the pitch. And that game was just wild. It didn't play through the middle. It was just kind of a bananas game of football. Just in the way that the pitch got big, Leeds does a really good job of spreading the pitch and spreading their players out. No doubt. And that's, so the game like bypassed the midfield. At times it felt like 8-on-8. And, you know, I don't want to say that Leeds felt like they were playing without a midfield because they didn't. But at times it felt like we were. Maybe it felt like 11-on-8. I don't know. It just felt like it was like one two-way traffic, like a highway right in the middle of the pitch for both teams. I think on Saturday we're going to see Robbo and Trent more active, more involved in the attack. I think the midfield will get its hands around the throat of this game, and I think we'll be fine. I wonder, though, a little bit of history. I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan, which means I haven't been happy. Being a Cowboys fan is a lot like being a Liverpool fan, right? We were all-time great, 70s and 80s. Well, not really the 80s. The Cowboys in the early 90s. But essentially, the Cowboys have gone 26 years. This is season 26. Since they last won a championship. And it feels like, I remember when the Cowboys were in the middle of their greatness, early 90s, 1993 season. They just come off the Super Bowl win. And Emmitt Smith is holding out. He wants to be the highest paid running back in the NFL. And Jerry Jones was like, no, man, I'm not paying you. So Emmitt holds out. And they win a couple of games into the season. And they lost their first two games. And there was a home game against the Bills, who they had beaten in the Super Bowl the year before, second game of the season. I think the Cowboys lost that game 14-10, 13-10, something like that. When the game was over, one of the iconic moments in Cowboys history was that Charles Haley, now in the Hall of Fame in the NFL, took his helmet and like put it through a wall. And basically told Jerry Jones to get Emmitt Smith's ass in the team. A couple days later, Emmitt's the highest paid running back in the NFL. He rejoins the team. Cowboys go on and repeat back-to-back in the Super Bowl. I bring that story up because I do look a little bit at Liverpool, and I wonder. I'm convinced that we're gonna beat Chelsea this weekend with a really good performance. If we do that, we're going to handle Arsenal at home. I think there's a good chance we're talking about 9-3. Now, look, maybe we draw against Chelsea. Maybe there's a couple of bad results that I just don't see coming a mile away. But I think we're going to be okay. And I wonder, with 9 points on the board through three games, what FSG and what Klopp at that point deems as must needed. Because I think this opening stretch of games at the beginning of the season is the toughest part of the season for Liverpool. It is the area where you could say, well, after 5 or 6 games, they may not be in first place. Because you got Chelsea, you got Arsenal, you got that game against Everton, you've got away at Man City coming up fairly quickly as well. So, I don't know. Like, I think if we can get through Chelsea this weekend, I think we're gone. I think we're going to be, I think teams are going to be chasing us all season long. If we don't beat Chelsea, maybe this early part of the season is every bit as tricky as it looks like on paper. And maybe it won't be 15 from 5 in a month from now. Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know what the number would be. Maybe it's 11. Maybe it's 10. And maybe somebody else has 13. I don't know. Like maybe, but my sense is there's a 2-game stretch coming up, Chelsea and Arsenal, that we get through these two games. We get through 9-3. We are fucking this league up. If we don't, and then maybe it, then at that point, this thing's going to be way more of a grind than, you know, than it was a year ago. And I think we've been anticipating that. But what I'm telling you is this: if and when we go beat Chelsea this weekend at Stamford Bridge, I think there's an opportunity there very quickly with Arsenal the very next weekend. You come out of Leeds, Chelsea, and Arsenal with 9, you're scaring the league. Everybody's like, oh shit, Liverpool. Not again. And I think Klopp knows it. I think this team knows it. I think we will go for the jugular this weekend because it's an opportunity to do so. And I think far more than people realize, this is a team that we don't always do it in the middle of games, but from 30,000 feet up, we go for the jugular and we do it really well. And I think Chelsea's going to find out the hard way. So until after this weekend's game on Saturday. Well, I'll do a post-game show. You better believe. I may do it right after the game is over. But until then, let's all stick together. We'll all walk together. You never walk alone, right? Up the Reds. We're staying in first place. Let's not change that later.